The following presentation is a production of Ride the Wave Media.
Step into the world of A's for Adversity, a podcast where we explore the journey of motherhood. Join us weekly as we navigate the intricate garden of self-discovery amidst the trials of motherhood. This is your space to nurture your identity and bloom. I'm your host, Jen Banks. Hey, hey, another Thursday, another episode. I am so excited to introduce to you today's guest, Dr. Jennifer Finlayson-Fife. If you're not familiar with her, she is an LDS sex therapist, and it was really neat to talk to her and learn from her. She said that this interview was a little bit unique because the questions were different than the ones she normally gets asked, and it was cool to look through a lens of identity as we talked about sexuality and intimacy. Something I learned from Dr. Finlayson-Fife is that she has an archive of all the podcast episodes she's been a guest on listed on her website. I think that's a really neat idea just to listen to her different conversations, and so you can find those on her website. I will be emulating that soon because I really like that idea. Without further ado, we will go to my conversation with Jennifer. Hello, I am here with Dr. Jennifer Finlayson-Fife. How are you today?
Good.
Good. It's fun to share the same name. Sometimes I tell people that Jen is short for generic because there's so many Jennifers, but we're all unique individuals, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we will just start with an introduction of you, and then we'll go into your work and how you serve individuals. So what is a favorite hobby of yours?
Probably just decorating and making my house and yard look nice. I love doing that when I have the time to do it. So, yeah.
Yes, right? That's the key word there, when we have the time. Yeah. That's such a fun, creative outlet. I love that. What are some of the hats that you wear in your daily life?
Well, not a lot more than, my work is so much of my life at this point because my kids are now out of the house, but I'm still very much I'm in the hat of being a instructor and coach and podcaster, and I'm, and writer and an author. I'm working on a book right now that I'm really pushing to get finished in the next month or so or two. But a parent, I'm in conversation with my kids quite a bit, even though they live remotely most of the time. And, it's interesting. My mom's passed away recently and was ill, so it was caregiver and figuring out the best place to get the care she needed, and just a lot of those kinds of tasks over the last year or more. So but that role has shifted now a little bit, so anyway, but yeah.
Where do you live right now?
In Vermont currently.
Well, what is one of your core values? What do you feel like drives you the most?
A really good question, and just something I have to think about for a second. My core value. I really value, honesty and integrity, which is different than saying I'm always honest and always have integrity, but I have a great deal of respect for it in humanity because it takes a lot of courage. And so I love stories about people who stood up and done the right thing, even when they had a lot of personal costs for doing it. It always moves me when I see people be honest in ways that are painful or kind of puncturing of their ego or what they want to have be true, because I know how much courage it takes, but the beauty that's also in it and the freedom that comes through it. And so it's just something that I think my heart has always kind of connected to, even though it's taken me time as I grew up to kind of understand what it was about that felt so important and promising. So I would say that's a fundamental value.
Yeah, that's good. And I love the distinction you made there that you value it, but you're not perfect at it because we're all striving to be better. Yes. But I love that that's a value of yours.
Yeah.
So my podcast centers around adversity and how challenges refine our character. When is a time that you experienced some adversity, and how did it shape you?
Well, one that just stands out is that, I think that when I one of the things that I did as a young person was try to establish myself as legitimate through success. Mm-hmm. And I married into a family that's very academically successful. And I was always a hard worker, but I didn't feel like I was necessarily academically gifted or just, you know. So I had a little bit of insecurity about that. And so, you know, I think what the adversity was is that my first child was diagnosed with autism, or he was on the autism spectrum. And for me, it really kind of brought right to the surface a kind of an unarticulated value that I was not going to be able to maintain, which is, you know, that your children will prove that you're capable, or that, you know, I mean, I know this sounds so lame because it wasn't what I would have admitted to myself, but it was like exactly my fear was there. I had my in-laws and their children, you know, and the grandkids and so on were just exceptional and exceptionally bright. And my first child was a special needs child. Now, I mean, I know that just sounds terrible, but for my insecure self, this was a kind of like, am I enough? Is it sort of about me? Hmm. And sort of making who my beautiful child was somehow a measure of me that I felt shame about. And so it kind of gratefully, to be honest, brought right to a head this issue that I had a choice to make about whether or not I was going to feel ashamed of or fearful around who my child was, or whether or not I was going to truly accept him and love him and get over myself, right? And get over this need or desire to prove something to myself through my children. And so it was a crisis. And, you know, it wasn't just that. There was also the crisis of, am I going to be able to parent him? Am I going to be able to give him what he needs? Is he going to have a fulfilling life? I mean, there were a lot of things beyond that particular issue. But it really made me kind of have to address it sort of straight up and see how it was operating in me, and that I was not proud of it. I did not respect it in myself. I knew it was unloving and self-focused, and that I had to grow up around it. And it wasn't like the last time I confronted that issue. I still confront the issue. It still will come up for me at times. And I'm like, Jennifer, we've been through this, like, knock it off. Okay. Mm-hmm. However, I don't know that had I not had that sort of acute sort of challenge to a desire of mine, that I'm in ways grateful for it, because it kind of pressures you to confront something and get stronger and more loving and more decent.
Yeah. Wow. I love that example. I feel like that's very relatable, because a lot of people see their children as reflection of themselves, but really they're such unique individuals. And it's funny, I hear people say, oh yeah, this is the child that makes me look good, you know, because really they are who they are, and, right, and they're beautiful, yeah, in many different ways. So that's great. Okay, let's move into what you do. And I have heard your name for years and years, and so it's an honor to be meeting with you and talking with you. So do you want to explain in your own words what you do, and then we'll go into a little bit of the questions?
Sure. So let's see, the fastest way to say what I do is that I teach and coach couples and individuals about how to develop more capacity for intimacy. And what I mean by intimacy is the ability to be an honest, open-hearted connection with a beloved other. And you'd think, well, intimacy, I'm all about, I love intimacy, it's great. You know, most of us think that we're, because what we mostly like is validation, and we tend to like closeness. But intimacy is this sort of ability to tolerate really being knowable and really knowing another person who is going to be different than you, that's not there to just validate you and make you feel good, that sometimes is frustratingly different than you. And so it's very connected to developing a greater capacity to love and know. And so I, having grown up as a Latter-day Saint and seeing some of the strengths and liabilities of the faith tradition, have really worked a lot with Latter-day Saints around some of the meanings that many of us inherited that have worked against developing greater capacity for love and intimacy? And what are some of our teachings and beliefs that actually facilitate growing in our capacity to love and know another? And so I do a lot of teaching and coaching and podcasting on topics that aren't just related to Latter-day Saints, of course. That's just been a kind of a focus of mine, but are very human challenges and very human questions about how do we really become capable of a deep form of monogamy? How do we really become capable of intimate friendship, which is a capacity? It's something you grow.
Yeah, wow, that's beautiful. I'm so glad I had you describe it because, you know, I hear your name and it's like, oh yeah, she's a sex therapist, but there's so much more beyond that. And the definition is huge. So thank you.
Yeah.
So my season this year in my podcast is identity. So I was wondering how identity relates to sexual activity in marriage or intimacy.
Mm. Oh, that's a good question. So, you know, it very much relates, first of all, to the question of intimacy. And because how we feel about ourselves and our ability to sustain our sense of self while we're in honest connection with others is highly related to our capacity for intimacy. Mm. And so when we have a fragile sense of self or our identity is kind of limited, we kind of will do one of three things. We'll either avoid intimate connection, right? We might be sexual, but we don't let our spouse in on who we are and how we feel, and we limit the amount of contact. Or we go and try to get love and validation and approval. So you can even be higher desire for sexual contact, but it's coming out of a neediness. Like, I want you to love me and make me feel okay about me. Mm. Or you can, see what I say, you avoid, you pressure, or you just, out of your need to feel needed or your need to feel that someone feels okay about you, you maybe go along with and you're sexual, but you're not really wanting to be there, but you do it because you don't want the displeasure or the lack of approval. And so we can do any of these things, but of course, if you're in a committed relationship and it's built on a foundational premise of attraction and desire and sexual exclusivity, right, then our challenges around how do I actually create something that's mutually desirable, mm-hmm. and how do we create some place where we can actually be together, those challenges around your sense of self or your identity come up right away in intimate contact. Because, you know, if you're struggling with your sense of self, it's going to play out in either high and low desire dynamics or very avoidant sexuality or just very limited intimacy. So much of the work that I'm doing with people is about helping them really look at the stability and the solidness of their sense of self and what their intimate partnership is revealing about where they're weak in this way. Hmm. And so I kind of use the context of a couple to work with the individual's growth.
Yeah, that's great. And that kind of leads into the next question of what obstacles are there to... That leads into the next question of what obstacles are there to inhibit the sexual relationship or functioning in a marriage.
Well, there's the kind of obstacle that I think a lot of people know about and assume, which is just sexual shame. You know, you grow up in a context or a family that says, you know, sexuality is a bad thing and, you know, only bad people want to be sexual or whatever. And you can just not want to develop or expose this part of yourself. But you can also, out of sexual shame, be a high desire person that's even kind of compulsive about sexuality because you're trying to get validation from the other person. So sexual shame is certainly one of them, and that can come from a family culture, a faith culture. But it's also about a willingness to be intimate. And what I mean by that, just kind of going back to the core value I talked about in the beginning, if you're going to marry someone and have an intimate relationship with you, they're not going to just be applauding all the time, right? They're going to be like, hey, that kind of sucks. I don't really like that about you. You know, and I think you're being kind of selfish or whatever it is. And a lot of us need that with like, how dare you? You know, you're supposed to love me. You know, you promised at the altar that you were going to love me no matter what. And we don't really want to confront that. What would be difficult about living with us? What would be undesirable about us? What, you know, how we're actually impacting our partner. And so intimacy doesn't always feel good. It actually pressures us to face ourselves. And so if we're unwilling to do that, because it takes a lot of courage and it takes humility, it takes a willingness to say, okay, you may have a point. And to let your ego be less important than what is true. And so that takes courage, and not a lot of people have courage. I mean, I've worked with people who've come out of the most dire situations, but they have a lot of courage and they're willing to face things honestly and they're willing to live as honestly as they can. And they have a lot of faith in the reality of goodness, you know, so they really push themselves. And then I've worked with people that have come out of pretty good situations, but their ego is primary. They don't want to take the hit of saying, look, I really am doing something that's hurtful or wrong. And instead, they stay in a kind of victim entitlement where they're just always blaming everybody else, their spouse included, for their problems, and they don't really grow. So while a lot of people say they want intimacy, and what they really want is approval, and, you know, most of us don't want intimacy. I mean, intimacy can be pretty harrowing sometimes because it's a willingness to be honest and knowable.
Yeah. So what happens when you feel like it's your partner's work to do? You've done the work, but you're waiting for your partner to kind of catch up. You just have to be patient and have a conversation about it?
It's kind of a tough question because, first of all, a lot of us think we're just waiting patiently when, in fact, you know, we're not as charming as we may think, or we may not be as far ahead as we may think. What I do think is often true is there seems to be an imbalance in desire to address the relationship, right? So one person's just like, I don't want to deal with your unhappiness. I don't want to deal with the marriage. Just, you know, let's not talk about it, and so on. And you can't make someone love you. You can't make someone grow. You can't make someone invest in a process. But you can be intimate yourself. And by intimate, I mean self-revealing. What we often do is go over and try to manipulate or get our spouse to do it, or, you know, try to, you know, pressure them to do what we want them to do, all of which is very understandable. But it tends to just justify resistance. Mm. What's much harder is figuring out, who am I going to be in this situation, given that I don't have control over my spouse's choices? And we can be honest, you know, we can say, hey, I am deeply disappointed in your unwillingness to address our marriage or our sexual relationship. I love you. I want something better for us. I recognize I am part of this problem, but I cannot lie that this is not deeply disappointing, and telling about kind of what you're willing to do here. Now, I don't mean you're trying to punish them. I'm saying you're saying something honest about what you see, if that is what you see, okay? Because there can be many, many different scenarios. Because what I have found is the less you're going over the line and trying to get the other person to want the right thing, and the more you're willing to see who they are and see yourself and control your own choices with more integrity, the more that actually pressures the other person. Because as long as they see you trying to get them to read this thing or listen to this podcast or whatever, they don't have to actually make a decision. They can just either comply with you or resist you. But if they see you moving forward, right, or being honest and acknowledging what you see, that can be pressuring, because it makes the other person realize, I have a decision to make. Am I going to step in or not?
Yeah, that's good. So do you feel like when there's sexual adversity or challenges to overcome, that it makes the couple stronger on the other side? Or what have you seen in that instance?
It can. It certainly doesn't always. I mean, you know, some people meet their adversity with resentment and pessimism and anger. You know, a lot of us come into crisis at some point in a marriage around what we thought marriage or family life was going to be and then what it is, right? Which is something more limited or something that's been disappointing. And the real question of humanity is, you know, I teach a course called Strengthening Your Relationship. And my thesis of this course is how you handle yourself when you're not getting what you want determines the marriage. Because in reality, marriage is about gaps of connection, disappointments. It's not just like running off in the field together. And if you made the right match, everybody's just happily ever after. I mean, we wish, but that's just nothing close to what marriage is. Marriage is about two different people who were attracted to each other because they are different, male and female usually, right? There's just, even in same-sex couples, people are coming together because they're different. And so that's just a lot of difference. And so the way you handle not getting what you want or your spouse seeing things a different way is going to really shape what the friendship or partnership is. And so, again, some people meet this with resentment and I'm going to go get, you know, go into another relationship or just build intimacy with my friends and close off or my children and shut you out. Or I'm going to take my disappointments here and grow and figure out, like, who am I in this partnership? Who am I in this sexual relationship? What can I learn from it? And I have a lot of couples who are willing to buckle down and do the hard work of looking at themselves, even in pretty dire situations where there's been infidelity or deep, you know, what could be considered a real justification to not look at yourself at all. That I've worked with people who are like, I'm really, everything's on the table. I'm willing to look at who we have been, how we got here, and how are we going to go forward differently. And when couples do that, I mean, they really go forward differently. Like that the break in the marriage or the crisis or whatever is often the sort of new foundation. It's the old foundation kind of crumbles and they're able to rebuild something stronger and better and really create a more intimate, more alive marriage. And, you know, very few people enjoy the crisis, but most people will look back and say, okay, I don't know how else we would have gotten here. Or, you know, that at least at a minimum, even if we could have learned it another way, I'm grateful to it because it was the springboard into a different, more mature, more intimate partnership.
Yes, I agree fully. There's a quote that says, I wouldn't pray for it, but I wouldn't trade it.
And exactly.
So I love exactly. that, just being able to step past it and rebuild in yes. a newer, beautiful way. And then I feel like that's such a great takeaway, just how are you showing up in adversity, any kind, but it's been neat to look at it through a sexual or intimate lens today. Yes. And so I was wondering if you had a favorite quote or mantra that guides what you do or that comes to mind. There are so many.
One that I say a lot, you know, I don't necessarily have like mantras all the time in my head, but one that I say sometimes that I think is absolutely true is what you most need. This is a Jungian quote. What you most need is, and this is a paraphrase, this is not exactly it, but what you most need is hiding in places you least want to look. And that is often like, it's in the crisis, it's in the rubble, it's in the adversity. It's like, what I actually need to learn here is hiding in this, that what I expected fell apart. Because it fell apart for a reason, and it's hard sometimes to then look and say, what is it that I need to see about myself? And our human inclination is to just get away from it. It hurts. It feels bad. I don't want to see that. But our souls need it, because if we can see what's true, the truth sets us free, right? The truth helps us grow into a person who's more solid, who's more capable of being knowable, who's more at peace with herself or himself. So we need that information, but it never feels good. Right? Never. Yeah. Well, I should say sometimes maybe it does, but if the truth is you're just amazing, but usually the truth has information that's invalidating of the world as we know it. And that hurts.
Yeah. Well, thank you. This has been a fabulous conversation. I know I took away a lot of insights. Where can people find you and your courses?
They can find me at finlayson-fife.com, and I have 5 online courses. I made them specific for an LDS audience, but they are not LDS. I have that context in mind, but they're not really heavy on theology and things like that. So a lot of people who are not LDS buy the courses. I also have a podcast called Room for Two, where I'm working with couples, real couples. Their voices are distorted. They take on pseudonyms, but I'm working with real couples around relationship issues, very common relationship issues around sexuality, marriage, raising kids, and so on. So, and then I just have a free podcast, which is a collection of podcasts like this, where I'm talking with different people, but you can find it all on the website.
So great. Thank you. That is so awesome. I can imagine it's so helpful to hear other people getting advice, because you can take those things and apply them to your relationship. So
yes.
Thank you for the work that you're doing. That's so fascinating. I just honor what you do.
Thank you so much.
Yes. Okay. Thank you for listening. Speaking of podcast guests and episodes that I've been on, I was on the Mosaic Network podcast. Such a phenomenal network. It is a space for authentic leaders to rise and share what they know. So you can check out my recent episode on there. It was also an extension of the speech I gave recently at the Mom Summit, The Shoulds That We Carry. Thank you, as always, to Blaine from Ride the Wave Media. Check out his podcast, the best podcast in Utah, Radio Daybreak. Make sure to follow me on Instagram at AsForAdversity, and I'll talk to you next week. Bye.